Welcome to Alex and Annie, the real women of vacation rentals. With more than 35 years combined industry experience, Alex Huesner and Annie Holcomb have teamed up to connect the dots between inspiration and opportunity, seeking to find the one story, idea, strategy, or decision that led to their guests' big aha moment. Join them as they highlight the real stories behind the people and brands that have built vacation rentals into the $100 billion industry it is today. And now, it's time to get real and have some fun with your hosts, Alex and Annie.
Welcome to Alex and Annie, the real women of vacation rentals. I'm Alex.
And I'm Annie.
And we are joined today with Ben Coleman, who is the president of Revan Research. Ben, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, ladies, so much. It's such an honor to be here. Just watching this podcast grow and talk, you know, meeting Annie first in Vegas last year, and then meeting you at Amy Hynek's Women's Conference in November to see what y'all have done in what such a short time is so impressive. And it's been such a pleasure to watch.
Oh, thank you very much. We're super excited to have you here today, and just getting to know you over the last year has been such a pleasure. And it's great to call you a friend and a colleague now. But so we want to hear a little bit more about who you are. And I think you've got some incredible stories that I've heard tell some of the stories to me and to other people. And people are just kind of in awe of all the things that you've done in your short lifetime. But can you give our audience just a little bit of history of who you are and your involvement within the travel space?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of a funny story, and just kind of the way I was listening to Corey from Breezeway's episode yesterday, and she just said it and it hit me again. It's like, there's no way that got into the space on purpose.
Right.
Nobody really set out, or very few people set out to be property managers or in the vacation rental space. But I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. We had a condo down in Destin, or multiple condos growing up. My grandmother, you know, rented them on paper. You know, she still has a calendar for the family to come down. But I didn't realize growing up for, let's say, 20 years that I was in really the Mecca or the biggest, the biggest area of vacation rentals in the country, and grew up there and just had no clue that this was a business. Oh, I mean, just never dawned on me that you could make a business off other people's assets, that you could make you can make real money, that you can bring real value to other people's lives from managing their assets growing up. But when I was 24, I decided after some work things, and that's a whole nother story, but I moved down to Mexico. It's a little island off the coast of Cancun called Isla Mujeres, about 6 or 7 miles long, probably about 350 vacation rentals. Anything from, you know, anything like an Airbnb, just somebody's random room in a house, to, you know, full on vacation rental listings, 12 bedroom houses overlooking the water. So very vast a difference of inventory, but I still didn't get into the vacation rental business until I bought a bar. got my first investment with no real intention to make any money off of it, just something to do, somewhere to eat and have fun for free or at cost.
Yeah, sounds like fun.
That's not bad.
It was a lot of fun. You know, the bar business is a pretty epic training ground to move into vacation rental. You know, our business is based on margins, and the bar business margins are probably smaller and harder to conquer than being a property manager.
Yeah.
Especially in such a seasonal market like where we were, you know, you could go 3 or 4 days in the middle of June and see 6 people at your place. And how do you balance budgets? How do you take that responsibility to the balance sheet of the business, or feeding other people's families, however you want to say that? How do you discipline your business? How do you discipline your price structures to be able to handle, 100% seasonality and then basically zero? But no, one of my buddies, still a good personal friend of mine, business partner, kind of not as much anymore as time's gone by, but he was walking by the bar and goes, "Hey, Ben, I know I owe you some money," because of course I let people run tabs at the bar.
Probably didn't help with the margins.
Yeah,
it really didn't. I mean, it's kind of the bar business, the vacation rental business, kind of go on similar paths when you start, because it starts off when you've got 1-2 properties or you've got 12 seats at a bar. It's fun.
Yeah.
Because really at the heart of our business, it's not that hard of an idea to add listings online, talk to guests, be nice, clean a room.
Yeah.
Get another guest in. That's really easy.
Yeah.
Brian Moffitt from Royal Destinations kind of told me that story. He goes, Ben, but it's really, really hard to do it at scale.
Yeah.
That's
it's really, really hard.
Very good point. Yeah.
We just, our first of the month episode that aired in September, we talked to Simon Lehman and he talked about profitability and kind of like, you know, how you have to have the strategy for profitability. And so I think that's something that crosses all types of business. It doesn't matter what business mm-hmm. you're in. You have to really think about how are you going to be profitable and how are you going to like set yourself up for that scalability.
Absolutely. And we kind of did that at the bar kind of at the same time in the vacation rental business. But it's one thing to make, you know, to pay yourself $100,000 in our business or $50,000, whatever unit count you are, whatever the size of your business is. It's a whole nother ballgame. It's a whole nother level to actually build a business and to build true profitability and then profitability into sustainability.
Yeah.
The business is not just sellable. The business, maybe the goal of the business is not to sell it, but it's to pass it down through generations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a totally different ballgame when you get into our margins, our fee structures, and building actual business equity and building actual business savings and really having the structure in the business to be able to be adaptable and proactive in purchasing technology and purchasing maybe business intelligence tools in your own business. Like Alex, I know y'all are working on some cool things right now. And I don't think that would be possible if it wasn't for Roy building a true actual business and corporation.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can't afford to have a CTO and a CMO and data scientists and all the other things. Exactly. If you're just, you know, running, you know, driving the business by no margins and not watching the finances. It's super important.
And I think it's a very easy thing in our business to do because
yeah.
It really doesn't matter what market you're in. Like, say you're in a drive-in market like, you know, Savannah or Charleston, or you're in a Myrtle Beach or Panama mm-hmm. City, where it's more of a 12-week is kind of the heat or kind of the
meal. Yeah.
Either way, we're always seeing bookings come in. Cash flow, is, you know, 80%, 90% of the year, it's coming in.
Yeah.
But the problem is that cash flow is not necessarily our money.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No. You have to be good stewards of money. Wait. So your friend came by that.
Yes. Absolutely.
Keep it on the good story. I want to hear the rest of it.
It's great. He walks by. He owes me about 2,500, 3,000 pesos. So say, let's just call it $150. But he walks by and he goes, hey, Ben, I'm coming to pay you today. I made $1,000. And I kind of just yelled back at him. Man, $1,000, 1,000 pesos are a little different.
Yeah.
I couldn't get my head around how you could make $1,000 on this island. I mean, that's a lot of pesos.
Yeah.
You know, back then, we weren't making $1,000 a week running a bar.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, I'd tell him, like, hey, come in, I'll buy you one more beer and tell me how you get $1,000. And he was renting his mother's three units. Right on the beach, a beautiful, beautiful building, right where the bay hits the Caribbean.
Yep.
And I just still couldn't figure out if this was a real business or not. Cause I'm like, oh, good. Your mom's giving you 15% of the rental revenue. She wanted to have you down here living with her in the winter. And it didn't dawn on me even then that was a real business until he kind of got into the owner's pool, kind of an HOA association where you had, and down there, you know, we don't really have owner contracts. It's kind of just, shakes. And if we did have an under contract, it's probably not going to be fully enforceable anyway. But he got into that owner's pool and all of a sudden I realized that they were giving us 15% of the money real quick. And I said, okay, so this is a real business. And so we spent the next years kind of doing everything on Excel. We had no clue that this was an industry. We had no clue people like y'all existed.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of joke at Wheelhouse, you know, that I feel like I invented revenue management because I had no clue that was a real
thing. You didn't even know that was a thing. Yeah.
I didn't even know those were two words that go together.
Yeah.
How far we were. But no, we spent the next years just building that business up, figuring out the margins of the business. But it was quite a shift of anything I'd ever thought about travel.
We'll be back in a minute after a word from our premier brand sponsor, Wheelhouse, the ultimate revenue driving machine.
Yeah, I use Wheelhouse and I love Wheelhouse. I feel like it's like a Mac version of pricing, right? You can just kind of dive in and start pushing a bunch of stuff. You're not going to break anything, but you can kind of just learn it. And then they have so many great tutorials and luckily for me, the customer service has been amazing also, which is really important to me. So if I have a question, I can actually get somebody to respond.
That's John Hildebrand, owner of Hildy Homes. John opened his business in 2019 and manages a small portfolio of luxury homes in Scottsdale, Arizona, where he prides himself on being able to create a truly five-star guest experience. We asked John what it was like trying to figure out a pricing strategy as a newcomer to the industry.
Well, when I first started, I didn't even know any of that stuff exists. I just was doing it all manually. And I'm like, this is so much work to try to figure out pricing all the time. So I did try Price Labs for a little bit, but for me, it was too PC. It was very complicated. Somebody showed me Wheelhouse and I just kind of dove in and I was like, oh, this is a lot easier. So then I've been using Wheelhouse ever since.
There are lots of tools on the market that can help you with pricing and revenue management. So we wanted to know, what impact has Wheelhouse had on John's bottom line? We'll find out later in the show. It's all part of Wheelhouse's spotlight on exceptional property managers.
I'd ever thought about what actually goes into the back end of creating great guest experiences, creating great historic rental revenue for our clients' assets. And we sat and we grinded in a 1,500 square foot apartment till 2-3 in the morning for probably 2 years. You know, it's a lot of manual work when you're scaling a business, going from 3 to 30 or 3 to 40 in the first 6 months.
Wow. Yeah.
Do it all on Excel.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not even joking. Like, I mean, we did it all on Excel.
Right. It's really funny. Your point about it, you said you had a real business all of a sudden. I've heard Roy tell that story about the early days at Condo World back in the late 80s when he moved down here, almost the exact same thing, that they started everything on pen and paper and notepads and, you know, keys on the wall and everything else. Yeah. And started with a few units and then started, they got up to like 20 or 30. And, you know, somebody else in the company literally said, you know, we've got a real business here. And then that kind of hit him like, wow. And, you know, we need to figure out how to manage this inventory. And that's when we got our first PMS in the early 90s, I believe. But yeah, it's amazing whether back then or now people still just stumble into vacation rentals and they realize, okay, there's actually some pretty good money here. This is a good business to work in, but really interesting how you got your start with that.
It is. I mean, it was the most random course of events that could have happened.
Yeah.
I think the real pivotal thing though was I had had tech companies before, or a tech company before. I had worked at AT&T. You know, I cut my teeth in sales, selling yellow pages at 21, you know, having never actually used one, except when my mom asked me to get pizza out of one. Something you've never used and to do that successfully. But I had about all the meetings that I'd ever want to go to.
Yeah.
That we all kind of feel that way. I think we're really blessed and lucky in our industry that like this gets to be my new, like these are my new meetings. I get to hang out.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
Annie, you know, there's so many wonderful and exceptional people in our industry, you know, like, I mean, I get 30 minutes with Lance and Elaine Stitcher today. Like what's more fun than that?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. Now we have the best industry and the best industry family of people to get to have these conversations.
And it truly is a family. It really is.
Yeah.
I've never seen a business like from an industry standpoint.
Yeah. Me neither.
To be so shareable when it comes to business practices and so open. And the content that we put out is so, and it's why I love y'all's podcast, even though, you know, I know Wheelhouse is sponsoring it. We're sponsoring it at Revan Research. We're still putting out such valuable information. And I love the mix of episodes that y'all do, because we get some that are geared really toward operations or really toward, I love the Explorer episode. But you get such a mix of why people got in here that really gives the rest of the industry, it kind of empowers them. Lets us keep going, because as much fun as the business is, being around the people and doing what we do, it's also very, very hard and taxing.
Yeah, it is. And I think being able to hear from other people who are similar to you and have done similar things, it helps. I mean, having that community is a big thing. And, you know, going back to, you know, we are all very collaborative. And I think just as an industry, we are all of us are a growth-minded type of individual, you know, that we all know that this is not a fixed mindset kind of game, that there's infinite possibilities for all of us to do well in this industry. There's no shortage of business and opportunity. So being open to sharing really just helps all of us. And just how much the industry has grown collectively in the last couple of years has come out of just understanding that concept. So it's a cool thing for sure.
I agree. And I think the coolest thing about our industry is it's got such a low barrier of entry.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially with the, with our market cap. I mean, I've read anything from 40 to 65 billion. When you start getting into those numbers to literally be able to start a business with some charm and a smile and knowing how to put something on Airbnb and VRBO is pretty attractive. And I think I see it on a weekly basis at Wheelhouse talking to some of our smaller customers that are maybe in lease arbitrage or they've got a house in Myrtle Beach and then they manage their two neighbors. And talking to them and their, and I, it's been interesting this year to see their, kind of see the light bulb go off in their head of how important managing revenue is at that small account. Yeah. But I think that's what's very attractive about our industry. And it really attracts like-minded people.
Yeah. And I think the great thing about that is now is you go back, I would say, you know, a couple of years prior to COVID, those type of people weren't as prevalent because they didn't have access to the technology that could make it so much easier. So I think that because our industry is collaborative, there's these technology companies that have opened up their APIs and they've opened up their teams to be able to say like, yeah, we can work with a guy that has one unit or two units. Because again, like Alex and I talk about, it's really important that we embrace these people as they come into the industry and give them the tools and the education so that they can be a good player and good participant in everything that we're doing. Because again, to your point, low barrier of entry can bring in a whole lot of people that just aren't playing by the rules, and not because they necessarily are trying to not play by the rules, but they just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
And I'll go ahead and tell you, we had no clue there were any rules in this business when we started. Yeah.
Well, they were made up as we go along. So
yeah,
we were duplicating VRBO listings. We were spelling.
Well, back then that was allowed. You know, there really weren't any specific rules.
We were all playing any available opportunity that came along until even our hands slapped.
Terry White said in our episode that aired last week about how that's how he used to do VRBO and all the listing sites, you know. So, and he's the king of distribution. So back then, that's how everybody did it.
But no, I thought that was what was so cool about Nashville, so cool about Darm is I don't remember meeting more than maybe one, two people that maybe had 10 or 15 units in lease arbitrage. And I think like 8 to 10.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to hang out with them a little bit more than I got to, but I really made sure to spend some time with them just because I think that as we talk about how what the bulk of our inventory or the bulk of our industry is, you know, let's just say less than 3 units.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the professionalization of our industry will kind of start from that bottom up.
Totally agree. Yeah. And that's the challenge for sure.
I think it's the challenge. I think the more that we educate, the more the content that we get out, the more podcasts that we get out for people to listen to is only going to be better and better. And I think the shocking thing meeting these people in lease arbitrage was number one, seeing them at Darm and not necessarily like international or maybe a VRMA spring event.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing them at a conference just dedicated to data and revenue was impressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they all said, we need a pricing tool and we need somebody to help us.
Yep, exactly. And that's where you come in, right?
Yeah, that's what we do. We, you know, we've got 5 people on staff and we're probably running, you know, nine 40-hour weeks between the 5 of us and 75-80% of that time spent inside of Wheelhouse still learning how to massage the model, still learning how to exploit demand spikes at scale has been a interesting task this year.
Yeah. And so you took what you learned in Mexico and you got to a point in Mexico first that was up to what, 300 units?
No, about 150 or about 200.
Okay.
Real estate transactions happen so quick down there. You would have houses come in and out. You know, 365 days, then maybe just 3 or 4. Then maybe, I mean, we had people that would just rent it for, they didn't want to be down there for Christmas and New Year's because it was too busy. Same thing.
Yeah.
You can rent my house those 3 weeks, make us enough money to be happy.
That's still a pretty good sized portfolio.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Especially managing from, you know, from a distance with stuff in the US and going back and forth, right?
Yeah. Well, back then I was there full time.
You were full time? Okay.
Yeah. I was probably 80% full time down there for almost a decade.
Oh, okay.
You
know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Years kind of run together. COVID doesn't help my year memory.
The bar, everything else.
So you survived managing properties in Mexico. You survived a bar. You survived, I'm going to guess by conversations we've had, the drug cartels in Mexico and came back to the U.S.
Kind of. Yeah. We had a couple.
Kind of.
Are they still out for you? Should we be watching?
Only we lost one limb.
So they were very small run-ins. They were more probably not even, you know, wouldn't even be on a radar.
Right. Yeah.
But just the ability to, for a police officer down there, be able to do whatever you want, whatever you want at the moment. Got kind of scary to me. Also, you know, the business was about as good as it was getting, about as profitable as I knew how to make it. And in this process, you know, I didn't want to take any more meetings. And as I was in the heart and in the guts of the business, I started realizing there's two different ways to grow our revenue. You know, and I say it this way: horizontally, we add units, we add more nights that we can sell, or we can grow the revenue in the current inventory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we can grow that revenue. We can make the business more profitable that way. And so I got just hooked on that side of the business. You know, I was kind of one of those that thought I'd figured it out too by just changing our prices on Airbnb and VRBO by $1 every day.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, that really kind of almost was a little bit of the foundation of me getting into revenue management and then eventually building our own rate tool inside the business that we sold for a little while. But it was what got me hooked on it was I could make a decision on price, no matter how elementary it was, but then see a result.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That to me was just so cool. And so when you're managing that many units, changing pricing for what you see or feel in the market got very, very taxing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we ran the route of VAs. We ran the route of everybody's just going to do it 2 to 3 hours twice a week. And we're going to get in there. And, you know, I used to buy beer for everybody because it was going to be a late night. And we'd get in there and yell rates back and forth. And how are we going to change this? And eventually it just became, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got lucky enough to meet some people that understood what an API was at the time, that understood how to build technology. And they started looking at what we were doing and they're like, man, this is so easy. Like, look, y'all have an API. We can build out to it. We moved to a property management system. And yeah, like we can actually change prices like on a computer.
Yeah.
Like, I could grab my whole 20 units that are alike and move prices up 20%. Like, this is amazing. And it was really not until ResFest, I think in 2018, that I realized that this was an actual industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. You're still relatively new at all this. I mean, you're kind of a newbie in relative terms to some of the people that we've talked to.
Absolutely.
Not new at it, but just new into the professional space because he was doing it for so many years in Mexico, but didn't realize what he was doing.
Yeah. I mean, on some levels you were doing all this stuff and you didn't know this whole world existed. And so now you're like full on into it. So,
And it's been very, it's kind of gotten me more and more obsessed with the business. It's the industry. It's hard to keep my attention this long. and I kind of describe the vacation rental business as it's in a Rubik's cube that you're always kind of turning and figuring out.
Yeah.
Don't turn away, man. Change colors on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Start all over again.
Yeah.
I think that's really another reason that you see people stick into this business for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's there's always something new to learn for sure.
Yeah. It's really great if you have a short attention span. I can vouch for that 100%. Please. No one day is ever the same, whether you're in management or you're in a provider of something that management companies uses. It's always changing.
And then, you know, kind of coming over more into the consulting or kind of service side of the business, the way that people get this job done well is crazy to me.
Yeah.
Because you know, most businesses that I've been in, bar business especially, you get it done right, that's great. Now do it 10,000 times.
Right. It's all about replicating processes versus the difference in our industry. I remember Andrew said this on our episode, and I think he talked about it in his wheelhouse presentation at DARM, that, you know, every property management company runs things differently. They can be on the same software and using the same systems, but they all do things a little bit differently. So, and it just depends on what the objectives of the business are. If you're trying to, you know, boost occupancy, if you're trying to, you're not as worried about occupancy, but you're more worried about revenue and care of the units. There's just different ways of looking at how you run the business and how you optimize software and strategies. But how did you, what came first? And when you started Revan Research, I know you you work with Wheelhouse a lot. Did you start first with Wheelhouse and then realize that you wanted to be able to offer your consulting services to their clients, or what did that look like?
It's actually a really funny story. I'm just sitting on LinkedIn one day. Oh, no. So the answer to that at first is I've been doing kind of revenue management consulting for a few people down in Destin. Just kind of in the fringes, still not knowing exactly how to get into the industry, because it's not an easy industry just to walk into. And I think it's gotten a lot more welcoming in the past few years.
Yeah.
But not knowing anybody, and then, you know, really not understanding the technology landscape at that point, it was hard to grab clients. You know, we didn't have an interface. Mm-hmm. It was basically you just had to trust me. Mm-hmm. So I started off on the consulting side of the business, just kind of just grinding, just, you know, making pretty decent money and just learning, you know, learning that Destin market, because I kind of, you know, looking down there, you could almost just work that market for the rest of your life and have more.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of inventory there.
There's so much inventory down there. And so I was already doing that. And I'm just sitting on LinkedIn one day and I get a random message from a guy named Andrew Kitchell. And so he's like, "Hey, I see that you've got a pricing tool and you do revenue management consulting. Like, I'd love to have it, like, love to chat." And so, you know, y'all know Andrew well now too. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's hard not to just kind of take a step back.
And absolutely.
Like, this guy's different. Like, he's got something. I can't put my finger on it.
Right.
Not exactly sure what he's talking about with this Wheelhouse thing yet. He's telling me the story about Lyric and I'm trying to follow. And I'm like, it was, you know, truly another kind of just very lucky thing that happened to me in the industry is Wheelhouse. I think it hired John DeRolay 60, 90, definitely not more than 3 months before they talked to me.
Okay.
And so I just kind of kept that conversation going. They hadn't raised money yet. They didn't know if they were gonna be able to raise money. So he just asked if I would come on kind of as a contract, kind of salesperson, help with the product some, really with a no agenda kind of deal there. And we were going to do it mm-hmm. for 6 months. And, you know, we just got along so well. The culture Andrew has created at Wheelhouse is so special. I knew I didn't want to leave it after 6 months.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, we got to spend a lot of time with the whole team at Darm and just, you know, over the moon about everybody there, just great team. And I can see why you didn't leave. It's a great group. And I think the innovation that they're doing and what they've got coming down the pipeline, this is just the beginning for them. And it's super exciting to be able to watch it.
It is, you know, I still kind of tell Andrew this and, you know, and a lot of us, I still feel like we're crawling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still haven't even got it.
It's like a slow clap.
Andrew invited me to go to Darm with him last year in Charleston. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first time I'd seen anybody in person.
That's when you and Annie met, yeah. I think, yeah. right? Yeah. yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so then it comes to find out at our first dinner that Andrew's not even the person that sent me that message on LinkedIn.
It was a bot.
That's right. I thought it was Amelia, wasn't it?
It was Amelia, actually.
Okay. We love her. Good God.
Oh, yeah. Amelia's awesome.
Again, goes back to Andrew's just like put together this team of truly like
rock stars.
Good people, smart, talented, unafraid, just driven. It's great.
Absolutely. And the way Andrew leads us and the way our tech team delivers on the product.
Yeah.
You can tell that empowers the culture. It also empowers our work ethic. It empowers our drive. You know, I was so happy when Lance said, I love that the spotlight on exceptional property manager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a great name.
Oh, thank you.
Great way to describe Lance and Elaine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
What great people. Yeah. Two great people. Yeah.
If you don't have a development team delivering on the product, you don't have people like Andrew, John, Matt Berg, some other people on our leadership team.
Yeah.
On the leadership team at Wheelhouse. But if you don't have that core of the delivering on the product and vision, it's very hard to give the customer service that we do.
Absolutely.
Product, I mean, just being on the technology side for, you know, for a number of years now and having been, you know, at a large corporation where technology was key and, you know, key component of everything that happened, being able to iterate on things consistently and deliver what the, you know, be one step ahead of what really the client or the consumer is looking for is so important that you're starting to see some of these technology providers, they're lagging behind because they just can't keep up with the innovation. And I think what Andrew introduced at Darm and what you guys are doing is going to really be a game changer in that you're giving that not the responsibility, but the access back to the property managers and not ramming technology down their throat and that like, you have to use this tool and this is the way it needs to be done. There's a balance in it. And I think you guys have a really great understanding and pulse of what your customer wants, what the industry needs, and you drive that technology team and they deliver every step of the way.
So well said, Annie. Yeah. That's great.
It's early. My coffee has hit me.
Yeah, Annie, that was like, that's just
that's like a campaign speech. I'm ready to go do something.
I'm running for office.
Yeah.
No, Annie, that's so well said. And I love how you said just jam technology down property managers' throat.
Yeah. Well, having come from the property management side, and again, what was interesting is when you early on, you said that you you came down to Destin, and Alex and I have noticed this, and I live here in the Panhandle. So to me, it's always been this hot market, but when you look at it, kind of step back, the Panhandle is like really an innovation hub. There has been so brilliant minds and brilliant companies and brilliant innovations that have come out of here. Yeah. So just for the purposes of that, we are claiming you, even though you're from Birmingham, we're going to.
You still have roots in Destin. So
you're still a Panhandle boy.
We'll allow it. And you fit in there for sure.
You know, I think that really is the goal of what we want to do at Wheelhouse. And also what we want to do at Revan Research is build support structures from the ground up. Yeah. And I say that a lot on the consulting side is, Ben, what do you actually do?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's really fun being a consultant when you don't have to do anything.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot you have to do. I mean, a lot. Exactly.
But if it doesn't feel like work, then it's great.
No, but you know, it's one thing, you know, in consultancy and audits, kind of like, oh, they just tell people what to do. And it's funny. I kind of hear that bleeding into a lot of our discovery calls, a lot of our follow-up calls with our clients. But our main goal, we really want to build a support structure around the business. Mm-hmm. We really want to build that support structure to give the PM or give the PM's revenue manager time back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the same thing at Wheelhouse. We want to build it from the ground up instead of building businesses and technology up here and then making PMs adapt to it. Why can't we build it from the ground up and let the technology adapt to their business practices?
Good point.
Let the revenue management foundation actually adapt to the current business practices, because it's very hard in our business if you do revenue management, or even let's just call it rate management, or this is how we manage rates one way. Not only is the property manager, is that his habit, is he stuck in that kind of rut of where he can't get out, the homeowner as well.
Right.
Not least arbitrage, where we can just change a revenue management strategy in a night because we saw something different, because we have that homeowner accountability if the homeowner's asset.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think you've got a great pulse on it. And that one of the themes that they talked about at Darm was the difference between revenue management and revenue performance. And I think that is that next level, that revenue management. Yes, that is setting the rates. That's pushing the rates out to next year. That's getting the rate periods and structures in place. But performance is taking it to that next level. And just the management takes a lot, but performance is, that's kind of where you're more sharpening the pencil and now looking at where can we, you know, lower rates that, and also be able to raise rates that you, at the end of the day, that homeowner is going to make far more money. And I think on the consulting side, you know, that's where I'm sure you have to do this with your clients. You know, you have to kind of help them explain these kind of things to owners, because that can be a challenging thing. Lance talked about that when we met with him, that, you know, at first it's more of a learning curve of just how you explain that to your homeowners. You have to learn it first and then you have to explain it. But it's an important part of the process.
It is. And that's one thing that I really take pride in that we do at Revenue Research. The two things you said there, one with how do we explain it to homeowners?
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you take 100-120 property portfolio and you're given all of that at one time, you're going to get a lot of emails from your property. We're going to get a lot of emails from our property manager that phone is ringing 24/7 of their homeowners asking, why is my rate this way? Mm-hmm. And so we utilize key data. We utilize Wheelhouse's market data on a daily basis to be able, and this goes back into that support structure of, hey, look, these are, by the way, the rates are this way. Here's five bullet points for you to explain this to your owner.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
And we really go, and that to me is that support structure, because I want that property manager not spending 2 hours trying to figure out exactly how to.
I mean, they need to feel confident in what they're answering. And the property manager is not the one in most cases that is actually in charge of the revenue management. So for them to be able to speak to it can be challenging.
And then through that process, I've just seen so much growth in my clients' knowledge of not just what revenue management is, but the language behind it. I think that's one thing that we're seeing flush out. I think we saw flush out a lot in Nashville. The industry's starting to get some language behind what revenue management truly is.
We'll be back in a minute after a word from our premier brand sponsor, Wheelhouse, the ultimate revenue driving machine.
But Wheelhouse for me has been game changer. I mean, I probably make 30-40% more revenue and definitely get a lot more bookings because of it.
We're back with John Hildebrand from Hildy Homes. Revenue management still requires a human touch, and it helps to have an outside source to validate your thinking. How does Wheelhouse's support help John know if he's making the right pricing decisions?
Mostly, I just talk strictly with the customer service over there. I'm like, hey, my one property is kind of slow. Am I doing something wrong? Can you mind looking at it, my pricing? And they're usually pretty amazing. They'll jump in, they'll look at it. They're like, okay, you know, it's really saturated right now and you're in a slow market this time of month, but the next 2 months, it looks like it's going to pick up.
Wheelhouse is offering listeners of this podcast 50% off your first 2 months. Go to usewheelhouse.com and enter promo code AlexAnnie or contact them and mention this podcast.
So touch on that a little bit, Ben, like DARM, like we were there and there was just a lot of conversations that went on. And like, so from your perspective, what were your big takeaways from the conference? I mean, Amy Highnote always does an incredible job of putting together, you know, deep content and bringing together the key innovators of the industry. So from your perspective as a revenue manager, consultant, expert, I would dare say, you know, what did you take away from it?
I'll tell you lots. The thing that hit me the hardest, I think, was Terry White. And please correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but Terry White saying that, you know,
he will. He'll be listening.
But kind of having founding fathers of the vacation rental business all in one place.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought he said. And I could be making that up. He kind of he said that, you know, the founding fathers, the foundation of our industry is actually still being built. And we need to build on top of that well for the next 30 to 50 years. And like, look, what we're doing, what y'all are doing here, y'all are building part of the foundation of our industry.
Yeah. We're still in the infancy, really.
Yeah, we are. And all of us getting together with that, you know, when do you get that lineup of speakers kind of undistracted and fully focused on what they're talking about for hours at a time? I think that's great. I think the thing that stuck out to me, though, is we're getting there, but we're still not there of being good at revenue management, of understand. And I think a lot of that is understanding the foundation of it, that we're managing assets. Not just listings. It's not just listings. It's not just homes. It's assets. And how do we do that well? And I heard more than I've ever heard about organization and documenting in revenue management. And going from, you know, going from where we started the year to hiring people at Revenue Research to, you know, basically continually accepting new clients. I learned real quick this organization and documentation is real, because revenue management is still founded, and maybe not founded, but still a lot of that is intuition, and that's not scalable.
Right. Absolutely. That's a very good point.
But organization and documentation is.
Yeah.
And I hear this, and this is kind of also what I took away, is we don't know if we need a revenue manager or if we need technology.
Yes. Yeah.
We know that we need one. We're not sure which one. And my response to that is, especially from a property management standpoint and a profitability in the business, is start off with a tool.
Yeah.
Start off with a tool, become a super user of that tool, document your steps. So then as it grows, and if you still feel like you need a revenue manager from day one, you can onboard that person into the business with true SOPs into the business.
Yeah.
That really stuck out to me a lot. What was y'all's two key takeaways?
I'll be honest, I didn't have any like huge takeaways other than like, again, things are just moving at such a rapid pace. And, you know, to your point that, you know, we're in the infancy and we are adopting technology, you know, at a really rapid rate. We're understanding revenue management. We're understanding the needs of it. What I do feel like I take away from the whole conversation is that vacation rentals has leapt past hotels mm-hmm. in terms of the adoption of these technologies, where revenue management in hotels has been around for a long time. And they have always taken the mantle of they're the experts and they know best. And I think that that's where a lot of the friction came in, is when people came over from the hotel side to tell vacation rentals. And I always use the analogy, like, you know, in the South, people don't take kindly to strangers telling them what to do.
Right.
And the hotel business, those are strangers. They're not running their business the same way. For me personally, I started out in hotels and then like slowly moved into vacation rentals, but been doing it for 25 years now. So I feel like this is where I was meant to be, but there's so many people that come in from the hotel technology side saying, use this tool, do it this way. This is the way it works. And we were like, no, we need to do our own thing. So go back to what COVID allowed everybody to do, where we were all panicking. The technology providers were able to take a breath. They were able to look at everything and say, like, this is what our industry needs. And they took that 18 months of really scary time, and they developed some of the best tools in all of hospitality. And I really feel like we are in a much better position as vacation rentals than hotels are, because our tools aren't antiquated. They're very new. They were built on a framework of adaptability and iteration. And so we can move quicker. And so you look at everything that was assembled at Darm, is that that's the best of breed. Like, we have some really great technology and really great minds developing all of this stuff and leading revenue management overall, not just within vacation rentals.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And yeah. I think exactly, Annie, what you said, that our ability to adapt technology is so much greater than the hotel space. And then on the vendor or on the business or the vendor side of it, if you're going to come into our industry and think that you're just going to work 30 hours a week and put out some subpar products, I mean, you have coming, because we do innovate. I mean, what other industry just pushes products out and pushes updates out the way we do?
I don't know. I mean, even, you know, again, I go back to my time at Expedia, and they obviously had, you know, hundreds upon hundreds of different people within their tech teams. And then as they bought channels, they had to try to put, you know, again, the Jenga of all technology together, but they weren't putting out updates like our industry is. Now, granted, much bigger tech stack to worry about, but I do think that vacation rentals as a whole is being a lot more innovative than other industries, and specifically, you know, compared to hotels. And I think that we will end up being the lead dog when you think of hospitality in 5 years. I really feel that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that one thing that I've noticed over the years, we've heard from our condo partners that are run more like hotels, basically with a front desk on-site management, you know, how important it is for revenue and marketing, the departments to work together. And, you know, really, I think that is just kind of hitting vacation rentals as a theme within the last, you know, more recent years, even though the hotel technology, I don't think has caught up to where we are. I think as a operational procedure of how the departments work together, I think hotels have that kind of streamlined better than we do. So I think that was one of my takeaways, is just, you know, really figuring out how revenue and marketing can work together better to optimize, you know, what's going out, what promotions are, how you're seeing things ahead of time, so it's not too late. I mean, by the time, in a lot of cases, that we realize we've got a low revenue unit, it's too late at that point. So Steve Milo had a great point in his episode on our show about, you know, they do monthly reports on the entire company, to various reports, to make sure that they're exactly where they need to be. And then that way, if you are falling behind, you've got time to make that up and move things around. So I think just being on top of that and having good communication between those two departments is super important.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. That's a statement there too. I think that we've had lots of conversations about this. Me and you just talking about how does marketing and revenue work together?
Yeah. Yeah.
And going back to kind of what I really like that I heard at Darm, I think the foundation of revenue, Alex, I've kind of said it to you this way, how do we build a bridge between revenue management or revenue and marketing? And I'm starting to think the foundation of that bridge is organization.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Is.
Yeah.
I think that as we see, and what we're seeing, what I'm seeing with the volatility of markets, and kind of, let's call it a return, kind of a getting back to kind of the old, you know, getting back to a new normal of more 2019 shorter booking windows. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to see the portfolios segment themselves again. Mm-hmm. You're starting to see, and you use the word, Alex, a variance report. I'm starting mm-hmm. to see a lot more of portfolios follow the trends of 2019, where you've got some top heavy units. You've got a lot of your, you know, your kind of dime a dozen condos, where you've got 50 condos in a building or 10 condos that are all the same in one building. Mm-hmm. You want to market those two completely differently. Yeah. You can market those completely different. The same way you want to manage their revenue completely different.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think there's things that the hotel or on-site property management type of vacation rental inventory has done that is, I don't know if it was strategic, but just the way that it works, I think it is, we could learn from it. One example of that would be if there's inventory where it's 2, 3, 4 bedrooms and they're all, you know, decorated the same way and they book at the same rate, those homeowners, when they log into their owner's closet, they can't see one, they can't see their exact rates for the unit, and they can't see their exact bookings when it's booked because the unit is assigned at check-in. So, I mean, they're doing it, they're running it like a hotel, but yeah. I imagine they have homeowners, their homeowners don't bother them nearly as much as ours do, because we've created such transparency, which I think transparency is good. But at the same time, when we're trying to, you know, when we know that we're relying now on technology to make these decisions, we need a little bit of a longer leash to be able to do that without somebody asking why we're making these decisions. So who knows where that'll go, but I think there's some validity in how they've set that up.
There definitely is. And I think that there's definitely some validity to that. And I think that as long as us as an industry, as long as technology vendors or technology partners keep mm-hmm. with that transparent theme.
Yeah.
Being able to give real value and show that value to homeowners.
Yeah.
I think that's where we really start separating ourselves from the hotel space, because all of a sudden, if we keep doing that, if we keep being transparent and say, look, we're doing the best we can for every guest that comes into your room to rent that for the most money we can, the most times out of the year, to mm-hmm. then to minimize wear and tear. You know, if we do that and we bring transparency and we bring value and we prove that value, all of a sudden it's a lot easier to get, to talk to a homeowner about renovating his property.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Building extra bedrooms, building pools, and being able to build the guest experience from the ground up, I think, is an interesting foundation of our industry that's not talked about very much.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
So where do you see, just like off the darn thing, like where do you see, like for the rest of this year, what do you think is going to happen in terms of, I guess maybe people stepping in and using more technology? Because it does seem like, again, people are came off a high, some are adapting back to go to 2019, but there are some people that entered the space at the high end. You know, they entered the space when everything was going gangbusters, and now they're like, oh my God, what do I need to do? Like, feels like those are the people that we need to outreach to and say, like, okay, here's these tools. You know, do you think that there's going to be a more rapid adoption for maybe those lower volume pieces of business, like, you know, again, the 2-unit guys, the 3-unit guys?
Absolutely. I heard that at DARM multiple times, of somebody with 6 or 8 units is like, we've got to get a tech stack going. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, man, when I had 6 units, I didn't even know the word tech stack was.
Yeah, exactly.
What are you talking about, a tech stack? Let's just see if you're profitable yet. Like, how's the business?
But
I think you see a lot of adoption with that. You see those, you know, obviously this is just business 101, but you see those people being able to move faster in the technology as well.
Yeah.
Also being able to, and what I do see on a daily basis is not only how quickly they can kind of adapt into technology, but how quickly they are to try them all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I've met with multiple people that have been on 4 different PMSs and they've been in the business.
Well, it's a lot easier to switch at that point. Yeah. You know, and I think that's a good point, that they have the flexibility to try a bunch of them and it's not going to completely bog down their business, but the way that it would if you've got hundreds of units. But
yeah. Well, even Terry White, he said, he was like, maybe I shouldn't say this, but he has accounts with all of the different pricing tools. And he's like, any given day, he's got all of the windows.
Yeah.
But he understands that each one has something that he likes. And so if anybody's listening, if you could take all of them together and take the
exactly.
The best. But I think, again, that, to your point, when you're smaller, you are able to kind of dip your toe in the water in everything and figure out, like, okay, if I dream big, if I scale up and I've got my goal of 200 units, what does that look like on this particular piece of software?
No, yeah, 100% of how do you do that? Same thing of like taking all four pricing tools and putting them into one pretty package. You know, from a technology standpoint, how do you actually do that? How do you actually create a usable platform?
Right. Yeah.
People can, like, you know, the person with 3 units and the person with 1,000 units can use at the same time.
Yeah.
That's very difficult. I think our industry does a good job of that. But I think the other interesting thing in our industry for the rest of the year is how many people from Lease Arbitrage come to international? Because those are the ones that can go. I mean, I met with a lady from Texas. She had 12 units at Dharma. Now she has 35.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
I feel like there's a bubble there with lease arbitrage. That's, to me, is a dangerous, dangerous way to go. But I know people are doing it.
So. Especially heading into a recession too.
Yeah. I think
that works in 2021, early 2022, when things were all flying high. But I think anytime there's an economic downturn, there's a risk there, but we'll see next year. Yeah. We'll find out.
It'll be also interesting to see how the markets respond to.
Yeah.
You know, we got midterms. I think midterms are in November.
Yeah.
November, we've got a lot going on. We've got a news cycle that's not great. You know, that's not great for us as an industry.
Yeah.
Using the word all the time. It'll be interesting. I haven't seen markets as volatile since, around 2018, 2019.
Yeah.
Even though those were great years, there were still some very, 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 very interesting seasonality going on. And what we're seeing going through the end of the year is just, you know what, proactiveness is going to win, being on top, putting some diligence in. And, you know, honestly, if you're a PM that doesn't really do revenue management, you just kind of set your rates and you kind of respond to what you're feeling. You know, if you want to take a dive into the deep end, you know, get very aggressive for occupancy in October and November and see those decisions play out so that you can build some confidence with little risk moving into 2023, which, you know, it's been a while since it's been this unknown in our industry of what travel is going to look like next year.
Yeah, I think revenue and marketing could not be more important in heading into 2023, because with less demand, we're all going to have to do more and just be very scrappy and just be on top of all the numbers to be able to get, you know, to anywhere close to where we've been these last couple of years.
Yeah, less demand, more supply makes it very difficult.
Yeah.
Makes it very difficult. And I'll tell you one thing that I see, Alex, and I see this in Annie, is when we offer our services, you know, we grind, we come, you know, we run variance reports, we call them a different name, but we run those kind of reports every day, every week. We put some projections and we build some things into them, work together. We grind over our services. We come up, you know, one of our taglines is taking aggressive goals and producing tangible results. So we know where we're going. And I see people that mix marketing and revenue that have a true, let's just say, kind of a little bit of a communication there. It really, when you start doing revenue management, you start seeing how portfolios interact and you get ahead and being able to kind of send out some marketing documentation to some maybe specific unit counts or specific buildings. It really is gas on the fire of revenue management. They really do work hand in hand. And I mean, I'm talking, you know, I'm talking 1-2x, you know, I'm talking like a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make something that just takes some time to build from the marketing standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it goes back to revenue management being an art form. You know, and marketing is art, and marketing is a lot of instinctual behavior, and marketing is a lot of creativity, and revenue management has a lot of that as well. And I think for a long time, people just assumed revenue management was just about the numbers and marketing was just about the feeling of it all and getting it out there, but they are so intertwined, and they're artworks that have to be together, kind of like I always think of like skaters, like a skating pairs, you know, dance teams that skate. They have to be in sync together to make it all work.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Well, so Ben, we want to have you back, and we could go on forever on this topic, but we want to have you back to dive into some more details on revenue management practices and strategies. And so we're going to have you back. We're going to do some bebopping with Ben on the regular going forward. And we're going to get some questions from our listeners about different things that they'd like you to come on and explain. So we're really excited for that. But I think this was a great introduction to who you are and what you've brought to the space so far. And we look forward to having you back, but thank you for being here today.
This was a blast. I knew it would be fun. I just, once again, I mean, the industry is so cool to get to do this on, as you said, on the reg with two of my favorite people on the planet. Is going to be so fun. And we'll tell some funny stories and we'll get some anecdotes mixed in with some data.
Making revenue management fun again.
Yeah, make it really fun.
Yeah.
Awesome. No, thank you for being our friend, first and foremost. Thank you for being a supporter of what Alex and I are doing and just being a good steward of the industry. You're such a great asset to all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Ben, if anybody wants to contact you, what's the easiest way for them to get in touch?
You can go to revandresearch.com, just R-E-V and research.com, or you can just shoot me an email at ben@usewheelhouse.com.
Okay, great. We'll put that in our show notes. And until next time, thank you so much for being here. And thank you to everyone for tuning in. If you would like to get in touch with Annie and I, you can go to alexandanniepodcast.com. And we will chat with you next time. Thanks, everybody.